thank you for coming back from lunch. Can you hear me in the back? It's okay? A little bit louder? Okay. How about that? Okay, great. I'm Shane Henderson. I'm at Cornell. This is joint work with several people. Millie Chu was a PhD student. She recently graduated from Cornell. Yuri Zinchenko is here. He'll be giving part of the talk as well. This is not part of his PhD thesis, but he was working on this while he was doing something separately for his thesis. And Mike Sharp was keeping us honest. Okay, so what we want to talk about is this robust approach to IMRT, which we'll get into the details of shortly. So four main items: problem overview. We'll talk about the traditional approach to building in robustness via a PTV and the robust approach, contrast those. If we get time, we'll get into the robust approach in more detail, just to give you a flavor of what the mathematics is, and then we'll talk about some work that's taking us towards the clinical side. Okay, so usual story. The idea here is we want to kill the tumor, spare the healthy tissues, and so you go through the usual sort of planning process, discretize the body, and then formulate and solve a mathematical program. The difference with the robust approach is just how you solve this mathematical program. Okay, so the specific problem that we're addressing is to find the beamlet intensities that we should use, and we're going to assume the following. So we assume that we've got fixed beam angles. We're not optimizing over those. And again, we're assuming we have the dose matrix. So that's an input to our problem. And I'll get into a little bit more detail about specifically what we need there in a little while. We assume that the dose to a voxel adds up, and that's something I'll describe in more detail in just a second. And we also assume that any beamlet configuration is possible. So we'll find the beamlet intensities. We won't worry too much about the translation of that into the particular fluence patterns that you're going to use. Okay, so the assumption that we make is the following. The dose to a particular voxel is the sum over all beamlets' contributions to that voxel. So here's this sort of linear assumption. So we've got the intensity of a particular beamlet and the dose to a voxel from that beamlet with unit intensity. So it's just a linear scaling thing. If you double the dose from a particular beamlet, you double the dose to that voxel. And so you can sort of usual story, you've seen many movies like this, I'm sure, where the dose is just added up from the different angles, and away we go. Okay, so the common types of models that we see, they have certain objectives, certain constraints, and really there's a lot of flexibility at this point, because no one sort of agrees on exactly what the objective and constraint should be, right? So we have these different forms. Our particular approach is similar to this one: minimize deviations from some sort of dose, prescribed dose or prescribed dose range. And the constraints that we include are things like this. We don't include exact dose volume constraints, but we do something very similar to that. Okay, so in our case, once we find a plan that sort of meets our goals, that's sort of what we're after. Okay, so the traditional formulation in this sort of setting is to minimize some penalty, which means add up the penalties for violations of these things and just minimize that sum. So what that means is that we don't ever run into the situation where you set up what you want and then you sort of say solve, you wait for an hour and a half, and then it says no feasible solution. That's not much fun. So what we do instead is we say these are what we want, and then we penalize deviations from those. So we would want the dose to a healthy voxel to be less than some prescribed level. We would like the dose within the tumor to be within some limits, and approximate dose volume constraints. So we won't get into the details of this, but if you're interested, I can tell you afterwards. The reason we use approximate dose volume constraints rather than exact ones is just that the ones that we implement allow us to use a much more computationally efficient algorithm than if we were to do the sort of integer programming approach to this. Okay, So what are the uncertainties? We've seen several of these. We've basically seen this slide about two or three times already. You have your setup errors, and then you have structural changes to the patient over the course of the treatment. And then you also have these errors within a treatment itself. And certainly the IGRT is really looking terrific. I'm very excited about that in terms of a way to eliminate some of these errors. But I think it's very important to recognize, and we've seen this with some of Mike's animations, and certainly other folks have acknowledged this as well, that even if you do manage to sort of change your reference frame for each particular fraction, there is still going to be some residual uncertainty, and that can cause some serious problems. So what we're trying to do is to explicitly capture this sort of behavior. Okay, so if you ignore that uncertainty, then you get the situation here where, it's grossly exaggerated, but here's the CTV in here, and depending on what happens when the patient comes in on a given day, you will deliver your dose, or you'll leave cold spots, or something like that. I wanted to just show you something there. So if you think about rigid body deformations, you can think about that as either the dose moves, or you can think about the patient as moving. So we tend to think about the patient is moving, and you tend to see little spots opening up in here, which we don't want. So what's done in practice, I think this is actually stolen directly from Mike's slide stack, so we have everybody here is sort of interrelated. It's incredibly, I'm not going to say it. Collegial. Oh, very good, yes. Saved by the bell. Okay. Very collegial environment. This is one of Mike's pictures. So the CTV is really what we want to deliver radiation to. The PTV is added to deal with this uncertainty. And as Joe was saying, one of the sort of common approaches here is to have with the existing planning approaches is no dose, no dose, no dose, lots of dose, get to the other side, no dose again. And that sort of square wave pattern we see in stochastic optimization in other contexts, not just in the radiation treatment planning area, it's usually not the right way to tackle these problems. So you tend to see something a little bit different when you sort of explicitly model that uncertainty. So you tend to get smoother profiles. So the robust approach is as follows. So this is really the punchline. What we want to do is look at the cumulative dose to each voxel over the entire course of the treatment. And we want that dose to be within some range. And with the robust approach, you say that has to happen no matter what, in the sense that we know that whenever a patient comes in, the CTV and the other structures that are going to be in different locations, we want to require that in every single one of those instances, you will get the required dose to the structures that you want. Now, this has to be within reason, because we know that it's sometimes completely impossible to avoid damage to the adjacent structures. So there has to be a sort of a within-reason clause in here somewhere. And that's pretty much it to the robust sort of optimization mindset. The key things here are to figure out what this should mean. And a very natural way to think about that is from a probabilistic point of view. So I want to explain to you where the probability intuition comes from. Now, the probability intuition motivates what this within-reason means, but it doesn't have to be the only explanation for it. So there's another way of thinking about these robust problems, which is just the no matter what thing within a certain sort of region of deformations. So that's another way to think about it. But the probability side of things really clarifies, in our setting anyway, what that sort of neighboring region is that you should deal with. So this is our formulation, and it looks very much like what you saw before, except there are probability statements. And so we again have, we don't want the dose to healthy structures to be too big. We want the dose in the tumor to be within a certain range. And this 0.95 here is really just a tunable parameter. And as we increase this number over here, we're being more and more stringent about the requirements that we want to achieve. So what that means is we're getting more and more robust as we increase that number. So think about it as a tunable constant, not as 5% error being the right number. Okay? And again, the variables we work with are the beamlet intensities.
Every dose level, let's say from 95% up,
kind of yeah. It certainly is possible that we could look at, there's something called a parametric approach to these things where, yeah, what, like what you're saying, in principle what you do is you pre-solve for several values of those right-hand sides. And then you look at the plans and you see which ones you like to look of. Yeah. I'm sorry. Oh, how difficult is it? Well, we have a penalized formulation, so as that number increases, it does mean that you're starting to be more and more unreasonable about what you expect. So as you increase that number, you're trying to require things that are simply physically impossible. So what happens is the penalties tend to go up, but the problem difficulty doesn't change in any sort of substantial way. Is that a fair comment, Yuri?
It doesn't affect the flux. You're still dealing with the same problem, but you might be saving different.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. So, what is the sort of? Oh, I'm sorry. Yep. Oh, I'm sorry. So the yeah. I'm sorry. Let me explain that. These probability constraints are going to translate into just sort of typical constraints that you would see in a linear program or in a slightly extended version of linear programming, and those constraints cannot be satisfied in sort of exact form. Because what we're asking is sort of unreasonable. So we penalize sort of excess beyond certain thresholds. So for instance, if the dose if you look at the dose to voxels that exceeds a given threshold that we want to achieve, if you exceed that, we start penalizing that. And that those penalties get lumped into the objective. Right now it doesn't look like it, but we are going to sort of explain. What I want to do is explain how these probability statements translate into constraints, and then you'll see where where we sort of penalize.
Yeah,
there are constraints. Yeah. Yeah, the constraints tell us what those penalties are going to be calculated as. Yeah. Something like that, yeah. It is optimization, yeah. We are solving a convex optimization problem, and so it's really like in any of these sort of formulations, right, you have to be able to define the penalty amount somehow. That's what appears in the constraints, yeah. Okay, so what do these things look like? Or what should this sort of robust region look like? Well, let's think about the total dose to a voxel V delivered by these beamlet intensities. And if you think about that, you have N fractions where N ranges from 30 to 45. And so the total dose is the dose from fraction 1, fraction 2, and so on all the way through. So the total dose is a sum of a bunch of things over here. Now, those guys over there are random because we don't know explicitly what's going to happen to the patient on any given day. We know that we're going to do our best to remove those that randomness, but there's going to be some that remains. So these guys you can think of as random variables. And whenever you have a sum of random variables like this, you tend to think, well, you know, maybe the central limit theorem holds. The sum of random variables in great generality tends to look normally distributed. Now, this is not a crucial assumption to what we're doing. The main reason I'm pointing this out is that it becomes a very natural way to explain the kinds of uncertainties that we can deal with. So the central limit theorem says that this total dose should be roughly normally distributed with a mean and a variance that depends on the beamlet intensities that you're giving. So now how does this observation translate into those constraints that we're going to put into the problem? Well, it's pretty much like this. We want the constraints to be violated with low probability, and remember we're assuming that the total dose to the voxel is random and it's normally distributed. So here's its density function, there's its mean, and this is some sort of threshold, this MK. And we want, for a healthy structure, we want the probability that the dose is large to be small. Sorry, yeah.
Mu and sigma are the same for all voxels?
No, they're different for each voxel, yeah. We've sort of buried some of the dependence in the notation, yeah. So you want this to hold. So you do the standard trick with normal random variables. You standardize by subtracting mean, dividing by the standard deviation. And then what we want is a normal 0, 1 here. We want the probability that's larger than some threshold, to be small. That means the threshold here has to be somewhere out here. It has to be large enough. So you get a constraint which looks like this, where z is just some quantile of a normal random variable. So if you're familiar with sort of statistics, this will look very familiar to you. We're just standardizing, that's all. But if you rearrange this, this is the kind of constraint that you get. So the standard deviation for this voxel, for this set of beamlet intensities, has to be less than or equal to some function over here. And then we express that standard deviation and that mean in a sort of a nice way based on the modeling of uncertainty, and that gives us our constraints. So a constraint which looks like this gets translated into something that's sort of very nice for the optimization packages that have been developed, for instance, at McMaster. So Yuri, I'm just looking at time thinking maybe we should switch, eh? Yep.
Thank you. Yes.
Sure. Yep. So what happens there? Yeah. Well, let me point out what you would get in that case. So you would get either sort of on or off, right? So you would tend to each time you deliver the dose in an okay. So I'm trying to be sort of extreme here. I'm going to make this die, right? So if you look in your initial statistics textbooks, they say you add a bunch of IID random variables. And there's a sort of a rate of convergence to the normal distribution, and that then they say, well, how do you make this die, or how big an average do you need to get something that looks roughly normal? And people will typically say 30, and that 30 is actually wildly conservative. Even for symmetric distributions or anything like that, it's fine. Now, it's certainly true that the doses here are not exactly normal, and we recognize that. But by sort of saying they're roughly normal, you're actually pretty close to right. I could show you all sorts of pictures if you like. Not for this, but I can just, we'll make up some hard examples, and we'll see it's actually pretty good. And so what we're really getting is that the form of the constraints is important. It's not really important exactly that this thing is exactly normal. No, that's fine, actually.
Far, then I can believe what, you know, what you say. The question is how far off
No, but, well, yeah, sure. No, maybe
but
you can say
that. The main point here is that we include the effect of fractionation, that you have to look at the cumulative dose. It is correct that if you look at just at the dose delivered on a single, you know, single treatment session,
right,
it can be widely skewed, but this is the key that motivates us to use this. The certain shape of the uncertainty. We'll look at the added dose.
Yeah, you're absolutely right that it in one single dose, it could be a very different from normal dose. But, one single fraction, it could be something very different from
live. I'm talking about the distribution.
Yeah, but
these constraints, you can see there's one for each voxel. So what we're... Yeah, this is a very good question. What we're saying, they are correlated. And in fact, the fact that they are positively correlated, we think, makes this even more a good approach. So what we're doing is we're imposing constraints on each voxel. Think about it as marginal constraints on the joint distribution, if you're familiar with that kind of stuff. But maybe I should let you...
Yeah, so we can discuss it afterwards. So once again, I would like to stress that the main point of this approach is an attempt to introduce the knowledge about the uncertainty that we have, and build it straight into the optimization model, thus trying to reduce the size of this PTV safety margins. So we're trading off the knowledge, the specification of uncertainty, for the size of PTV. So this is what we're targeting. So here is a small sort of numerical example that we worked on. That data was provided by Mike, so it's based on the actual clinical case. So we have in a prostate cancer patient, and here I would like to just show you this to compare the traditional or so to speak, linear programming approach that doesn't include this robustness, just put the safety margin, versus this robust approach as a black box for now. So, as was mentioned, the uncertainty we're looking at for now will be just rigid body deformations. So just to keep things simple. So we assume that in this case, I mean, we allow only shifts. And we'll represent this uncertainty but by a number of extreme scenarios of what might happen. Let's say in the worst case, you can go 2 millimeters up, or you can go 3 millimeters down, and so forth. And associated with each of the geometrical scenarios for the organ locations, we have probabilities. That is, this shift is likely with 25%. So the comparison that we performed is based on 8 millimeter voxel size resolution. We assume that at every treatment, so when patient comes in, he can be randomly shifted according to one of these scenarios. And based on that, we compute the cumulative dose for a patient that he receives during the course of the treatment, let's say 45 fractions. And after that, we're going to plot the dose volume histogram for the expected cumulative dose, or in other words, we're going to plot the dose volume histogram for the dose that was accumulated over the period of 6 weeks. So here are the results. The dotted lights are the dotted lines correspond to the standard or non-robust approach, where instead of CTV you put this big thick margin and call it PTV, and you work with PTV. And the solid lines are the robust formulation, where instead of putting this thick margins around PTV, we substitute this with this kind of probabilistic uncertainty. So we're saying we know these scenarios, we know how things will look in the worst case. Okay. So the main feature to notice here that it allows us to actually to push down the dose volume histograms for the organs at risk all much further into the origin. Right. So the DVHS and it will look better. So another point, another observation to be made is actually the previous histogram just showed the expected dose, the dose volume histogram for the expected dose. Now expectation does not usually or does not always represent, you know, every individual sort of scenario or every individual realization. So you can have sort of zero expectation of a random variable, but it can be, you know, plus minus 100 with 50% chances. So here we plot, let's say we simulated 100 identical patients that came in. Each one of them was subject to the same procedure. And these are the results, so we plot this DVH clouds. This illustrates that actually the actual realizations are not far off from the expected values. So one more thing to point out, that actually this robust approach also introduced not just quantitative changes in the fluence pattern, but it also can suggest some qualitative changes. That is, so here we represent, this is just a 2D slice of a patient. So this is PTV covered so very heavily with the sort of traditional, you know, traditional dose. So you hit your PTV very hard. But it, at the same time, sir, you burn through the half of the bladder. So once we apply the robust approach, actually, so we're just looking at the, our goal is to cover CTV. So what we can achieve numerically is to cover CTV sort of without affecting bladder that much. And with regards to these qualitative changes that I mentioned, actually it suggests that one of the beam angles is dropped from consideration. So it suggests that this vertical beam that was used in the sort of traditional model, somehow it disappears. It's not robust against this perturbation. It does serve bad service for you. Now just very few words from about where this robust formulation comes from. So first one, why traditional linear programming can be bad for you? So if we look at very simple linear programming problem. So we just defined our non-negative orthon. This is our constraints. So the feasible region is everything within this triangle. And let's say we try to minimize our objective function here. So by, you know, your graphical simplex method or whatever you can use, you can easily identify that solution is here, right, at this point. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going just to wiggle this hyperplane a little bit. So this hyperplane will just turn ever so slightly. And what it results in is, first of all, this point, which we thought was optimal, is no longer even feasible. And then the optimal solution can widely oscillate. So this actually sort of represents this sensitivity of the traditional linear programming towards these perturbations in your constraint matrices. So I'll have to skip through this part. And do I have, you think, 2 minutes to mention this?
I think you should go to the clinical stuff.
Okay. So I will explain this slide if you want to know more details after the talk or during the coffee break. So the nice thing is, well, one thing I want to mention, that all the linear constraints that were just posed naively, if you apply this robust methodology, what you get is you get the constraints that include just Euclidean norm. So it's linear part, let's say greater or equal, less or equal than Euclidean norm of another linear operator. So, and geometrically what happens, so here on this slide, if I wanted to tickle the physicist's nerve, if you remember what is Lorentz cone. So geometrically, if LP corresponds to, let's say, minimizing some linear objective over this edgy feasible region, then its robust counterpart, which is robust with respect to this all possible reasonable perturbations in your linear constraints, will correspond to the minimization over the Lorentz cone. So you get rid of the kinks in your LP feasible region that will allow you to have the solutions which ice cream cone. I mean, so you have norm, let's say, in three dimensions, let's say norm of x1 and x2 less than x3. Norm of the vector, which is comprised of first two components, is just light cone. Right? Or in relativity, this is the cone of the events that might happen. Yeah. So this is, I mean, people use this. And it's same cone that you would see in relativity. Just instead of non-negative orthons, which is a cone as well, right? You use the cone with just much smoother edges. So, okay. So as I mentioned, this turns out that this probabilistic constraint that were shown earlier just translate into something which looks like this. So we have the Euclidean norm of some linear operator less or equal than something linear as well. And turns out that these are actually, if you pose the optimization problem which has this type of constraints, they can be solved extremely efficiently. In practical terms, for let's say problems arising from IMRT planning, that the cost that you would pay to switch to this non-linearity is roughly, let's say, within 5% of the cost that you would pay to solve the LP. So it's very minor. So now I want to just spend a few minutes saying where we stand right now as of solving this problem. So first of all, what are the data that we need as an input to this robust optimization framework? So we as an input, we require, let's say, we need influence matrix corresponding to each of these extreme scenarios that represents the uncertainty somehow. So we would ask a physician, a radiation physicist, to say, okay, this can happen, this can happen, this can happen, and give us just the corresponding influence matrix. So second of all, that typically in practice, only few scenarios suffices to guarantee this robustness to this. All possible perturbations within the given range. So the problem that we are solving is, you know, find us the best solution that will stay feasible for all possible perturbations. Like no matter where you shift your, let's say, organs at risk sensitivity, according to the scenarios, I want the solution to give us the sort of smallest deviation from a prescribed dose. So, of computation, typical problem with 1 centimeter voxel resolution having around 1,000 beamlets and 3,500 voxel takes less than 30 minutes. And this time can be press down, let's say, optimistically, I would say, on single processor machine, you can bring it down by a factor of 2, at least. And this is what I'm working now at Mac. And I mean, we are, of course, we are aware that clinically accepted standards for the voxel resolution are much lower. So we need to crank down the solution times and our ability of solving such type of problems. Now, another a good feature of this kind of problems and the algorithms that we use is that most of the time spent in the solver, in the computation, is devoted to performing certain just basic linear algebra operations. And these operations are highly scalable. That is, if we have multiprocessor architecture, they can be just parallelized easily. And we achieve fairly good ratio of parallelization. So you can let's say get rid of 80% of your time if you have enough CPUs. Now, another step that one can make towards solving more realistically sized problems is just pick few good scenarios that represent your uncertainty as good as possible. And we did not explore dose aggregation and voxel sampling for organs at risks and other structures. So as conclusions, I mean, in our view, that what we want to convey is the traditional approach enforces the safety margins that will sort of consequently expose organs at risk to much higher dose. And what we propose, our approach allows you to have much better organs at risk sparing. But the drawback, of course, the price you have to pay is that you incur higher computational costs, and then you have to give more information as an input to this problem. But still, I think it's quite reasonable to ask just this scenario, so specifying this uncertainty. And this approach should ideally work together with image-guided radiation therapy. That is, image-guided approach should get rid of the systematic errors that you can track. And then there will be always the small residuals that you cannot observe. And those you can further tackle with robust optimization techniques. So, thank you.
Let me see.